This message was recorded live at Lighthouse Christian Center in Puyallup, Washington, and is designed to inspire and encourage you in your Christian journey. To find out more about Lighthouse, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org.
Guys, there are many, many choices that we make to keep a healthy marriage, but I don't think very many of those decisions have as big an impact on the marriage relationship as the moral choices that we make sexually. Human sexuality is clearly one of God's great gifts to mankind, but what you should know is that God's standards on human sexuality, that is what He asked of His kids, are treated in Scripture as the most important of all rules for relationships among people. It doesn't take rocket science to even figure out why. In fact, I've given you a quote from C.S. Lewis that tells us why. Look what it says. I want to read it to you. Moral rules are directions for running the human machine. Every moral rule is there to prevent a breakdown or a strain or a friction in the running of the machine. So what he's saying basically is, God is saying that when God outlines the moral choices in His Word about sexuality, He's doing it because He loves us. He wants to prevent some breakdown, the anguish that comes, the pain that comes in relationship if we do not follow those commands. So the evil one works overtime in this area. Believe me, he does. When a married person gives in to the sexual temptation, makes a bad moral choice, man, that compromises the health of the marriage. And I'm positive that everyone listening to my voice here on a podcast or somewhere else, Lord, you know that you have been tempted sexually. And I can tell you that I've been tempted sexually like everyone else. So if you're married or if you want to be married, we're going to talk about some choices that will help you in God's plan for your marriage. We'll discuss attitudes and behaviors that are going to be compromising to marriage, but attitude and behaviors that will also be very good for your marriage. To do this, we're going to look at one of my favorite passages in the Scripture. It's Proverbs chapter 5. It's one of my favorite passages because it celebrates the joys of love, true marital love. Now, sometimes the secularists think the Christians, the Christian community is somewhat prudish, and we're even negative about sex, and that somehow we're even puritanical, but I can let you know something. All you have to do is read Proverbs 5 to realize that Christians are not puritanical. This man is not prudish. This talks to us about our sexual lives. This teaching, by the way, is in the form of an allegory. An allegory, of course, is an extended metaphor where images are used to produce truth, talk about truth. It's poetic. And the allegory we're going to find in Proverbs 5, man, is absolutely significant for anyone who's interested in a healthy marriage and particularly healthy sexuality. So let's look at Proverbs 5. We're going to figure out the elements of God's plan for married love and particularly some moral choices that we make in the area of sexuality that will help our marriage. Number one, the first choice we make is we make our spouse, make your spouse the exclusive source of your sexual enjoyment. Now, we have only one verse here. Look what it says. Drink water from your own cistern. A cistern, of course, is a reservoir for rainwater. Running water from your own well. Now, the author is making, you know, is using a poetic image here to teach about sexual morality. Israel, of course, is a very hot climate. This would have made very good sense to them. And what happens in a hot climate? You get thirsty. The temperature rises. You need water, okay? I talked to a soldier who was just back from Afghanistan last week. He had just arrived, and I said, "Oh, how hot was it in Afghanistan?" He said, 130 degrees. And I said, "I bet you need to drink a lot of water." "Oh, yeah. I was thirsty all the time." And all of us can remember a time maybe when we were in some hot climate, and we were sweating, and we were maybe hiking, and all of a sudden we take out this big, cool drink of water, and we drink it. Ah, that is refreshing. Well, guess what, guys? That is the image here. Enjoy your spouse sexually is what it's saying. But it's saying in a different way. Just like you might enjoy a good cold drink of refreshing water that quenches your thirst, enjoy your wife, enjoy your husband sexually. The term cistern or well, of course, are just symbols of the wife, nothing complicated about that image, but it just symbolizes the enjoyment and attachment that a husband and wife have for each other in marriage. The author wants to talk about this subject. He wants to talk about it without being crass or crude, but he wants us to get this very clearly. Here's what it is. Enjoy each other sexually. Now, of course, enjoy each other every way. You know, that's good too. But enjoy each other sexually. Just go to your own well, draw up water, and be refreshed. That's pretty clear talking. Now, this is expressed in many other places, of course, in the Bible. Song of Songs is just one of them in the Bible, but it's certainly presented here. Now, you say, Art, you mean the Bible commends sex? Surely the Bible is sex neutral. I mean, it just doesn't seem right. No. The Bible is decidedly for sex. Okay? Just read the fourth chapter of Song of Songs. You get it, you know. It's just the Bible is for sex within marriage. So sex, yes, and more sex, but all within the estate of marriage. By the way, you are aware, aren't you, of the University of Chicago, the highly, I would say, respected study, University of Chicago in the 90s, that found that faithful married partners, both men and women, reported the most sex and the best sex. Now, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? The most sex and the best sex. That sounds good, doesn't it? Well, how does it happen? It happens in a faithful married relationship. Culture's lie, and one that Christians can buy into if they don't watch it, is that danger and risk somehow create eroticism. That's just a big fat lie. No. Best sex, most sex, faithful married couples. That's where it happens, okay? Now, by the way, I want you to know, we believe in this so strongly that we're having a seminar in January 21, 22 on how to have a healthy sex life between a married couple. So, by the way, I didn't name this seminar, but this name of the seminar, and it's probably one you won't forget, is called Sexy Christians, okay? So I'm just telling you, get set for January 21, 22. I want to see all our couples there because we don't get this opportunity to talk about this that often, okay? Now, I want you to know here, this passage, Proverbs 5, it's all the way through the Bible. It just says this, be sure and enjoy the refreshing water of your own cistern. That's what it's saying. So then I must choose as a believer to direct my sexuality toward my spouse. And do everything I can to enjoy that healthy sexual relationship with my spouse. You say, Art, is this a moral choice, really? Of course, because your choice either to withhold or to give something that's so precious to your spouse is essential to the marriage. To ignore the sexual relationship, to be insensitive to the sexual relationship, or to direct my sexuality elsewhere. Man, that's a moral choice, and it has such a big impact on every marriage. Listen, it's about right and wrong, and sex is such an important component of a healthy married relationship. Now, of course, there is a second issue here in verse 15. It's about being faithful to your marriage partner, because notice the choice it says. It says, drink water from, and notice the emphasis here, your own cistern. In other words, don't be looking for other sources to quench your spirit, your sexual thirst. This is an exclusive relationship. It's just making the point, man, don't mess up God's plan for marriage. And what is God's plan? Well, it's called a covenant partnership. And a covenant partnership, man, a covenant is so important. In fact, I've defined covenant for you, a sacred, God-witness, public, mutually binding, irrevocable relationship between two parties who willingly promise and understand to live by its terms. God himself chooses to relate to Israel, to relate to creation, to relate to the church through covenant. And so when God calls marriage a covenant, it's very significant. I've given you some verses which detail this, but I want to read just one of them. This, of course, is a negative example, but it still illustrates the issue of covenant. It is because the Lord is acting as the witness between you and your wife, the wife of your youth, because you have broken faith with her, though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. And what we see here in Christian marriage is that a covenant is not just between the husband and the wife. God's involved. He's the witness. So God's in the contract. And that means that that's his plan for our lives. So when he directs or she directs her sexuality toward another person, there is sexual relationship with another person, man, then your covenant partner, that impacts the covenant, obviously. And it puts the one flesh partnership in peril. So here in Proverbs 5, the sexual relationship, man, is so important. So what are we saying? Don't back off. Don't ignore. Don't withhold. Don't manipulate. Don't look elsewhere for the sexual relationship. It's right there in your marriage. And as this passage continues, we're going to see what that means in an even deeper way. In fact, the second choice that we have here, pretty clear. Protect the sexual relationship with your marriage partner. Look what it says in verses 16, 17. Now remember, the extended metaphor keeps going, right? This is an allegory. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. Now this is similar with the ending of 15, but the image is just one of waste, just the useless spread of water. The image is just of water spilling out into a street, and of course, it's not achieving then its purpose of refreshing. It's being thrown away. Now, I think the NLT version helps us see this point. Look what it says. Why spill the water of your springs into the street, having sex with just anyone? You should reserve it for yourselves. And again, you see that sex is to be exclusive between a married couple. But you also see something else here. This is interesting. You see an intense tone, an imperative to protect what is so precious. Look what he says. Let these waters be yours alone to enjoy. In other words, do what it takes to protect that sexual relationship. Why would you allow the sexual relationship to be harmed, he's saying. No, don't do that. Do what it takes to reserve sexual intimacy for yourself, between you and your wife or you and your husband. Do what it takes and never let that be shared with a third person. That would be devastating to the marriage covenant. It's a moral decision that we make. Now, over the years, guys, I want you to know, and I know there are people in this room, talking to many, many people this weekend. I know there are people in this room who've been hurt this way. Marriage is one of the saddest things that pastors have to see is when someone has broken the marriage covenant, gone outside the marriage covenant for a sexual relationship, and many times it breaks that marriage. Now, there's always hope when God's in the middle of it. And so I want you to know that. There's always hope for reconciliation. But sometimes those relationships are broken and cannot be fixed. So what I want to talk to you about is two actions that you can take to help yourself here to protect. Remember what this thing is saying? Come on, don't go that direction. Protect this relationship. I want to talk to you about two ways that you can protect. And one of those ways is to guard yourself against adultery. Man, do whatever it takes to protect yourself, because if you get open to the possibility of adultery, you're eventually going to go that direction. Do you realize that the Janus Report in the 90s suggested that about one-third of American males have had at least one extramarital affair, and one-quarter of American women have had an extramarital affair? And in fact, we know how this goes on in the workplace. We see that in our world. Now, the consequences, of course, are devastating. Do you realize that stats tell us 65% of those who engage in adulterous affairs end up divorced? And by the way, even if you're not caught in adultery as a believer, the impact is so great on your heart and your life and your relationship, because you cannot help but distance from your spouse. And the covenant that you're breaking is so important. So when believers go through this pain, man, there is chance of reconciliation. I don't want to say it's over, because with God, forgiveness can happen. But I want you to let you know, you put everything you hold dearest in jeopardy when that happens. So the moral choice you need to make is, man, no adultery. Now, how do you do that? How do you guard yourself against adultery? Well, guys, we're talking about preventive maintenance here. I don't know if you realize, but recently the church has put in a new carpet. Why have we done that? Was the old carpet just totally destroyed? No. Doing a little preventive maintenance. Do we wait until the air conditioner or the heater stops, you know, before we do something about it? No, we do preventive maintenance. So that thing's just running smoothly all the time. Okay? Well, in marriage relationships, you do preventive maintenance too. You want to prevent a breakdown. And particularly, we're talking about protecting yourself in the area of adultery. So what do you do? Well, I have a brief practical list. We can't spend long, but we can do some things. First of all, make your marriage a priority. Believers don't start looking for sexual relationships outside of marriage. Usually they don't, if the marriage relationship is good. And so a big start on that is making sure that your kids, your work, your hobbies, whatever, do not get in the way of that relationship with your spouse. In other words, do life together. Stay connected. I want you to know that for my wife, Naomi, and I, you know, our relationship is a priority with us. You treat each other as equal partners. You make decisions together. You work together. You put up the wallpaper together. You do whatever you got to do. But you make it all happen. You do life together. You make marriage a priority. Number two, now you're going to say, Art, this is stupid. This is way, you're being very severe here. But listen. This just comes from sitting with people who've gotten in trouble. So here's what I tell you. Number two, never be totally alone with a member of the opposite sex other than your spouse. You say, Art, that's so radical. Listen, what I'm talking about at work, do not go out to lunch with someone of the opposite sex. I mean, if you're talking with a coworker about a project, keep your office door open or make sure your office has a window. That's the reason my office has a window, by the way. It's the reason all the offices have windows. It means we're not alone with those people. Because guess what? You have to be alone with someone to flirt with them. You have to be alone with someone to look meaningfully in their eyes. You have to be alone with somebody to tell them about how bad your marriage is. Okay? So don't do it. That's how adultery begins. And by the way, I'm going to say another thing. You're going to say, Art, you're being radical here. Listen, I'm talking also about email, Facebook, texting. Same thing happens. You're talking personally with that person of the opposite sex. And when you talk personally with someone, guess what happens? You can get emotionally involved. And when you get emotionally involved, you then have some tendency to be physically involved. So guys, be careful here. This is a little bit radical, and I know there probably are some exceptions, but man, in general, this has got to happen. Number three, when on the road, always have a slated time to call home every day so that you don't develop a separate life. And it's really the separate life that I want to emphasize. Because, you know, you can be on the road, you can be lonely, but man, call your spouse every day. Figure out, what did you do today? Oh, what did you do today? You talk about it, because then you don't develop separate lives. You guys, Naomi and I don't travel much, but Naomi and I do this at home. You know, when I'm going out the door, I say, well, honey, listen, I'm going over to this group over here. I'll be gone about an hour. See you when I get back. Why do I do that? I don't just go out the door. I do that. She does that because we don't want to live separate lives. Why? If you live a separate life, you then can begin to live a secret life. And so that's the reason, man. You gotta keep tabs on each other. Not enmeshment, not something unhealthy, you know, something like that. But something healthy that is good for you. So don't live a separate life. Number four, do not expect your marriage to make you happy every day and in every way. Now the reason I say that is, if you think that your marriage partner is the fount of all happiness, you will get discouraged and look for greener pastures. And now, yes, your spouse can always bring you comfort. They can always listen. They can always be there. But they will have different ideas. They will have personality traits that drive you crazy, that seem hardwired, that never change over 30 years. Okay? And they will make mistakes, and they will sometimes be self-centered. So just, come on, adjust your expectations. Adjust them. And remember that greener pasture deal, that is a big lie. That's a myth. Totally. They will not be a greener pasture. The best marriage that you can be in is the one you're in. And so go for it. Number five, develop your spiritual life together. Now, I won't say much here. I just want to say couples that tend to pray together, that do life together with God, who bring their problems to God, they're the ones that I think are protecting themselves from, they're protecting their sexual relationship in a better way. Number six, get help and input when you need it. Man, one of the most discouraging things that happens, someone will come into to a pastor's office, and you know, and they will say, they will talk about a problem, and they will say, yeah, this has been going on for 5 years. Don't let a problem go on for 5 years before you do something about it. Man, get help. Go to a pastor. Go to a counselor. Get help. And, you know, again, be open even, and by the way, before you even need help, you might even be open to preventive maintenance. You know, one of the things we do at Lighthouse is we have a ministry called Marriage Mentors, where we match a little bit older couple with a little bit younger couple. And they may meet twice a month for a year. What are they doing? That's just preventive maintenance. Doesn't mean that marriage is, you know, going belly up or anything. It just means, oh, let's remember again what it means, what married love is all about, okay? Now, we're talking about protecting your relationship, protecting the sexual relationship in marriage. Very, very important. And I told you there were two actions. Well, one of them, of course, is the issue of here of adultery. But I also want to ask you to do this. I want you to protect your marriage from pornography. I know it's not very easy to talk about, but man, there are many Christian men, now maybe nominal Christian, but still Christian men who think, well, you know, there's nothing wrong and everybody loves it. In fact, it even helps my sex life. Guys, that is yucky, okay? Okay, I just want you to know that. Unfortunately, it's true that more and more women are being swept into this as well. One author, because we have such a sexualized culture, one author, in fact, the guy that is going to come and do that seminar that I told you about, Sexy Christians, his name is Dr. Ted Roberts. He estimates, he travels all over the country, he estimates that in every church he goes to, about half the men are struggling in some way with pornography. Why is this so destructive? Why? Well, Jesus tells us, he helps us here, Matthew 5:28. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Now, Jesus is not being hypersensitive here and saying that the first spark of sexual attraction one has for another person is equivalent to the act of adultery. He's not saying that. Let's acknowledge, friends, come on, let's be real. Sexual attraction exists in our lives. And we are drawn to form and beauty. And that what that means, there may be some momentary spark when we see someone that we feel attracted to. But listen, you need to know that the Greek term here in this text has the critical dimension of intent. That's the reason that I use the new, the English Standard Version, because I think it nails it. Look what it says. Everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent. So what is Jesus saying? That if that spark of excitement you feel is fanned into flame, that if you have lustful intent, if you actively desire that person sexually, then you are participating in something that is damaging to your marriage. Okay? Sexual sin begins when the decision of the will is not to redirect that spark of attraction. And see, guys, we have that choice. It's always the possible choice. Do not ever say in your brain, no, I'm just a sexual being, I can't help it. No. All of us have the choice where we can redirect that initial spark of sexual recognition or attraction. And of course, the opposite can happen too, can it? Where we we have the spark, and then we fan it into flame. And then, of course, what happens is we can begin to fantasize and all kind of things, wrong things happen. I want you to remember, not the initial spark that's the sin. It's the downward spiral of attraction and behavior resulting from that initial spark. The lustful intent of Matthew 28 here includes pornography. And I know it's only one of the things that it includes. But I want to talk about pornography because, listen, why is pornography wrong? We have it right here. Because it is actively desiring the person, that image, on the page or on the screen. And often with the intent of sexual release. The reason I bring this up is, man, this is killing people. Do you realize that $3,000 a second is spent on pornography on the internet? That internet pornography is multi-billion dollar industry. It's bigger than all professional sports put together. All professional sports. So what we have to do is we have to guard our lives from pornography. Why? Because then we'll be guarding our marriage. Remember we're talking about here in Proverbs 5? Come on, protect. Protect your marriage. And protect the sexual aspect of your marriage. So we got to guard our lives. So I'm going to just give you a brief practical list. We don't have time to do much. But I'm going to tell you just a few things. First of all, would you resist this sin? One of the things I told my son when he was about 11 years old, is I told him, son, listen, you are a sexual being. You will have sexual desires. And he agreed with me. Yeah. Okay. You're going to have sexual desires. And sometimes I told him you're going to linger too long on a thought or an image. You are going to fail in some ways. And when you do, you got to go get God's forgiveness. But son, never, ever give in to this. You always resist this temptation. Because if you don't, the alternative to say, well, that's just the way I am. I will just give myself to this area of my life. And when you do that, you are a goner from word one. I mean, it's what Job did. I have made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl. And he just said, I'm never going to give up on that, man. That's the covenant I've made. Will I fail sometimes? I may in some ways. But if I keep moving with God, if I keep saying, God, this is my stance, this is my choice, then I'm not liable to make that deep slip that will hurt me so badly. Now, I'm going to tell you a few other things here, guys. And some of you are going to say, well, you're being too radical again. Listen, this is a radical subject. This is an important subject. So I'm going to just say one other thing. Always have a filter on your computer or have somebody monitoring it for you. Now, I've said this a lot over the last years, either filter it or have it monitored. I said it a lot, but some guys say, well, Art, those filters are a nuisance, man. And I just can't get to the sports sites I want or whatever because it blocks it, okay? Here's what I have to say to that. Deal with it! Okay? Because it's better to be a bit frustrated with that than to have pornography funneling into your house. So, man, it's too dangerous. Now, guys, I'm going to say something to wives. Wives, have you ever heard this phrase? Trust, but verify. Ever heard that phrase? What that means is, okay, yeah, you trust your husband, but don't assume that they have filtered the computer. Ask them to show you how they have done that. It's important that males in your home not have access to a machine that can spew unlimited pornography at the click of a button. And many women, there are some women in the congregation who are much more savvy about computers than I am, certainly. But I think in general, men are more interested in computers than women. Would you say that's true? Boy, I'm not getting any nods. I guess I'm showing my age. That's bad. Okay. But in general, you know, guys, it seems to me the guys are more interested in computers. So, guys, ladies, come on. True, trust, but verify. Next. Would you please not subscribe to premium channels? I mean, guys, some of you are saying, well, Art, you're meddling. Listen, would you agree with this? The heart is affected by what the eyes see. Would you say that's true? Is the heart affected by what the eyes see? If that's true, then let's just get real. Get rid of the premium channels because they have nudity on them. Just get rid of them. You know, some of you are saying, but I like the movies. Do you like them well enough to hurt your marriage? Come on, protect your marriage. Protect it. Help it. And then finally, I'm going to say one other thing. There could be many other things to say, but I'll say one other thing. Break isolation in your life. Men and women are hurt sexually when secrets are kept. And secrets are kept when you do not open your life to other people. Men especially are not as good at this. Many men don't even have one friend other than their wife. So you need to do what's necessary to break isolation. We can never know ourselves by ourselves as well as we can know ourselves in conjunction with other people. That's the way God made us. And so, guys especially, but gals too, you need accountability, you need help. In fact, guys, every person I have ever helped, every man that I have ever helped who's come in and told me, Art, I'm in bondage to this thing or something like that, every one of them told me this. You're the first person I've ever told this to. Nobody knows this. Because it's shameful, it's painful, yeah, it is. There's no doubt about that. And of course, Satan works overtime at putting a big shame cloud on you so that you won't reveal. Okay, so guys, all I'm saying is this. Don't isolate yourself. By the way, remember when I told you we're going to do this seminar on healthy sexuality? Right after that, we're going to start for men-only groups. And these are for anybody who's interested in working with five or six other guys to make sure that their sexuality is going the right direction. And this would be from anybody who's having just a few problems to all those who feel in bondage, okay? But also, of course, even currently, our Accelerate Recovery group works for that. But these are going to be very, very specific to that issue. Now, guys, third choice. We only have very little time. Choose to build and maintain your marital satisfaction over time. Look what it says. Now we're getting to the heart of this thing. May your fountain be blessed. May you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Why be captivated by an adulteress? Why embrace the bosom of another man's wife? Now we're getting to the central truth. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Man, it's a moral choice. Doesn't matter how long you've been married. Doesn't matter what your spouse looks like. Doesn't matter if your husband is getting furniture disease where his chest is falling down into his drawers or whatever. Okay? It is. What it's saying is, it's saying rejoice in the husband or wife of your youth. By the way, we could have done it on the opposite side, but I would not dare do that. Okay? I'm smart, you know. Okay. There we go. So, guys, what we're saying is take joy in the relationship. Take joy. I mean, that's the theme here. The wife here is being sensually compared to a loving doe or a graceful deer. That symbol suggests, agility, grace, form, beauty. You say, but Art, I'm not sure that describes my spouse anymore. Well, friends, you have two choices here. Look what it said. A husband is always to be satisfied with his wife's breasts. Now, we've already talked about the choices that a husband must make to direct his sexuality toward his wife and vice versa. But yes, breasts do seem to be the focus here. Nothing much has changed in 5,000 years. But the basic point is not the breasts. The point is, if a husband is to be satisfied sexually, it is because he has directed his sexuality toward his wife and found satisfaction. And if a wife is to be satisfied sexually, it is because she has directed her sexuality toward her husband and found satisfaction. Guys, we can't allow our sexuality to direct us. We direct our sexuality. And if we don't do it, man, we're going to have a problem. Now, again, even the word satisfy here in the Hebrew, it has the connotation of drinking to one's fill. It's a part of the whole water analogy again. It's man saying, man, you own the well. So just, man, drink as much as you want. That's what it's saying. Now, some of you are saying, but Art, the thrill is gone. Or I don't feel attracted anymore. Listen. This passage says this. Sex is important. So, read my lips. To the degree that you have sexual desire, channel that toward your spouse. Dead marriages, whether dead sexually or dead relationally, I don't think are biblical marriages because they don't honor God. Now, I realize there are some physical things that get in the way of that, and I understand that there's some issues there. But man, if you have desire and you have capability, man, renewal and growth should be a part of your relationship. And even it says, be captivated by her love. You know that Dr. Walt Kaiser, who's a Hebrew scholar, has said that word captivated there in this context is best translated be intoxicated. A husband is told to be so infatuated with his wife, to love her with such enthusiasm, that sometimes it feels like being drunk. Okay, I mean, what an image. So when a man is captivated by his wife, the sexual component of that relationship tends to take care of himself. Now, I want you to know that my wife, Naomi, and I do not look like we looked when we were young. My skin is wrinkling in places that surprise me. Okay? So, and I used to go, oh, all right, we shouldn't have gone there, buddy. Okay. Too much information. Okay. But I want you to know, now Naomi would probably tell you that there are some things she doesn't like about herself as well. But my love for Naomi has actually deepened over the years, and I am more attracted to Naomi, not less attracted. Why? Because I've been captivated by her love. And, you know, that's a whole other sermon on that, on how to be captivated, but I think it has something to do with a shared life, shared activities, shared goals. You're doing life together, and you're making it work together. And you're captivated by that person that you partner with so many years ago. So, man, what I'm saying, pretty clear, here's my point. See, that word, there are two words in here that are important, always and for, always and ever. May her breast satisfy you when? Always. May you ever be captivated. It's about building and maintaining satisfaction over time. Over time. This doesn't say, by the way, you know, I hope you're satisfied with your wife sexually. I know it's going to be a lot better when she's younger, because when she gets older, it's going to be bad. So just deal with it as best you can. No! None of that. Always. Ever. So you're going to build and maintain over your entire married life. Now, guys, we don't have time to tell you about the warning. There is a warning at the end of this thing. God's saying, guys, I'm watching. What you do in your marriage is important to me. I'm watching. And by the way, there are consequences if you don't do the right thing. Now, guys, God's always a gracious God. And, you know, things can be redeemed. And I want you to know that. But he's saying here pretty clearly, man, you will be caught in the cords of your own sin. That's what the scripture says at the very end. You'll be caught in the cords of your own sin. And it won't be a pretty sight. So guys, I know that this is an issue that is of vital importance in marriages. And I think of the scores of couples that Naomi and I know over the years that through difficult seasons, through the aging process, through pain of loss, man, they have made the decision to protect their marriage relationship. They've made the decision to direct their lives toward the other one. And they have positive marriages over many, many, many years. They've rejoiced in the wife of their youth. They rejoice in the husband of their youth. And I know it's so honoring to God, and it certainly does makes all the difference in the world in that marriage relationship.
We trust you are inspired and challenged by this message. For additional resources and information about Lighthouse Christian Center and its ministries, check out our website at www.lighthousehome.org or contact us at 253-848-2028.